I'm Josh, and last winter I took off my clothes and went outside buck naked and froze.
That's pretty good.
So it was cold out.
Hey, this is Matt, obviously. And the one of the things that I've found most interesting about people that try to have some kind of political aspirations is the number of people that are smart enough to go, you know what, when someone goes, why don't you run? They go, no, because they're very aware they have skeletons in the closet. And if you just shut up sometimes and sit back, those can all be left alone rather than having them put out there. I just saw an article where an interview with Ric Flair where they're like, why don't you run for an office? He goes, no. I'm Ric Flair. I have skeletons in my closet. I was like, good boy. So, you know, maybe they'll just stay there if you don't push them out in front of people. Yeah.
You do wonder sometimes where you're sort of like I want to have a public facing kind of thing. Like, are you?
Surely no one will Google.
Yeah, like, for the love of God, nothing. Like George Santos being the most hubris of the hubrises. Like, it's just sort of like, it's like, my man, live how you want to live. That's fine. But like, come on.
Maybe
no way to talk about the former prime minister of Finland, dude.
Yes. And the inventor of the cotton gin.
Maybe the hubris is the procedure that makes you forget about all that stuff and puts you out on the public platform.
God, spectacularly.
It's pretty stupid.
Thinking about the hubris, where just Hugh Grant comes and circumcises you. and then you're a tragic Greek hero, yeah.
And I can't think of a joke necessarily, so I'll just say that there's Boom Studios, that's who puts it out, has got a comic called The Mighty Barbarians, and it's dope, and it's great, it's awesome, I really enjoy it, and it's cool, and it's weird, and it's less sword and sorcery and fantasy and Conan, and more just sort of like, it's more like The Witch, or like, if you took like The Witch and Dog Soldiers and put it like, kind of like barbarian Viking-y kind of shit, versus like the kind of Frank Frazetta, which I mean, it's good, there's nothing wrong with it, I'm not picking on it, but like a little bit less of like the airbrush van, and more of just like the gritty. It's fucking rules. So check it out, New Barbarians, or Mighty Barbarians, pardon me. It's a really excellent series. Instead of a joke about barbarians. There we go.
Instead of a joke, here's an ad.
Yes.
It's like every podcast.
Yeah, I know, right? But it's like giving us any money.
And we are hoping that you will find a new job this week on ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter. Please don't pronounce it ZipRecruiter. And this is Harsh Ahata.
I'm only going to hear that from now on, and that's
That's excellent.
First up this week, we have a short called "Ding," which it isn't actually called "Ding"; it's called "Thing."
Well, and I believe that's because language.
Yeah, the Dutch or German or whatever that is a deeply unserious language, and they just have the same words as us with a couple of letters different.
I know I looked it up, and it was, something Swedish, maybe? I don't know. Mm.
And you can tell that they're the ones in the wrong, because they came first.
Right.
But this is about a guy, let's call him Steve, who's walking warily down a street, you know, with his brim pulled way down low, and he sees a small homunculus child who kind of lurks behind bushes and stares at him, and eventually comes up and like humps his leg and takes a bite out of it and runs away. And we get a brief interlude of a guy walking a dog and yanking on the leash, right? Mm-hmm. And then the little guy is like, I gather he's picturing in his mind that he's going to go bite the guy's balls off.
Yeah, sure.
And then guys like holds out his arms like, come to daddy. And then the thing runs to him, and then he lifts the thing up and slams it on the ground and stomps on its head. And man, was I not expecting that the first time. And that was this quite impressive. But it did leave me wondering, like, what does it mean? Is it a parable about how you shouldn't have kids? Like, is it a pet? Is it a, I don't know.
Or maybe it's just confronting your problems head on.
Oh, maybe
this little thing is going to come up and bite a chunk out of your leg, and then it comes running at you again. You go, not twice. Fool me twice. Shame on me. And now I smash your head like a cantaloupe once.
Well, it's after the stomp on the head where he like flings it into the bushes, then it sort of meanders off, and it's sort of like,
so yeah.
That was the part that got me. Like,
it's only missing the cartoon whistle of like nonchalance. The whistle of nonchalance was in the latest Zelda game, by the way.
Hey, like, but he does that like
very boring, yeah.
Big up step thing, like kind of like Robert Crumb's Mr. Natural as he walks away, like a whistling, like okay. But the sound, the thing that stood out to me in this was the sound, like the sound of that thing makes, and the sound that the guy makes is just like they're very haunting. Like there's the echo chamber, like the echo chamber of like a can, like a tin can or something. It was like, I don't know. It was just. It's really weird sound. Like the mastering of it was very spooky and kind of weird.
I like actually found, like in the initial bit when like the little, like homunculus is kind of where I landed on that too. Like I didn't see that as like a little kid. I saw that as like, if you were, you know, to put that into like the real world, like if I were walking down the street, I would turn and see a thing that was very much like, oh, this is a walking, moving, uncanny valley thing. Mm-hmm. Like something is off. I'm unsettled by it. Oh, it's going to go in the same direction as me. It's speeding up. And like that like creates this great sense of like anxiety and panic is in me that's building and building and building. And then when it's like, oh, maybe they're going to pull the swerve and its intentions are benign. Nope. It takes a bite out of the guy. Fuck. And then I can just, you know, you picture that as like, you know, you don't think of a cat as like particularly dangerous, but then until one just completely goes mental. And just claws the ever-loving shit out of you. And you're like, oh, no, this thing weighs 12 pounds. And I am completely at its mercy right now, you know? And, like, the idea of that little thing is suddenly... I guess this defeats my whole Chucky argument. But this little thing is kind of scary. And the idea that, like, I picture it in my head, maybe more than it shows it to be in the fullness of the short, as being this relentless little thing, right? So you have, like, all this dread that I get from that first part. And then when you get to him just going, like, fuck this... and just kind of smashing the fuck out of it, then it's kind of just instantly comedic and kind of funny and satisfying. And I was like, wow, what a weird little ride this short is in just a few minutes that like really creeped me out and gave me goosebumps. And then instantly I was like, whoa, fuck, that's cool. Like all that happens in the span of a couple minutes. And that's pretty rad.
Go ahead, Tess.
I was just going to say, it was like before they kind of became more streamlined, like few people remember this, but like before it became more streamlined, Liquid Television used to have a lot more little segments of things, like short little things. They would have like little bits of stuff, and it'd be really weird. And there's a few that I've tried. I gave up years ago, but there's a few of them that I tried like hell to do research on. There was one that was like a cross between like it was like it took like. It was like a little bit of Albert Camus and a little bit of like Harvey Pekar kind of a thing, like sort of told through the prism of like Crime and Punishment, but it was like stop motion, and it was like this little 3-minute dealy, and it was just real weird and just out there, and but they used to have little segments, like little clippets of things, and like this kind of reminded me of that old school. Rough and tumble version of Liquid Television that they had at the very beginning.
Very much
this would fit right in there. It'd be like half awake, 12:30 at night, and I'm just like, what the fuck am I watching?
Well, just the like the ads for like Aeon Flux with like the eye holding the fly and the eyelashes was like enough to make me go, this is deeply unsettling. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like all the Disney of my childhood has not prepared me to understand animation on this level.
I got a kind of almost a Bill Plimpton vibe off this too.
A little bit, yeah.
Just with how sometimes the characters would move very, very quickly. And, you know, like they'd be walking normally, animating, and then just like zip both of their heads with, you know, even the humans' movements got weird. And things just feel a little bit more squishy and malleable than they should. And like, that's Bill Plimpton. Mm-hmm. And the hand-drawn, or at least the hand-backgrounded stuff felt really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, the it seemed like each figure was colored in on every frame, and so it was constantly changing just a little bit the texture of the big color washes.
There was something weirdly familiar about the style, and I couldn't quite place it. I don't know. It didn't. Mm-hmm. I never landed on what it reminded me of, but there was something about this from like, oh, this is maybe more unsettling because it's got like an element of some kind of familiarity of something from like probably from my childhood that I was like, oh, I kind of remember like this animation style. Yeah. And the subversion of it being weird and creepy and violent was perhaps more effective because of that. But yeah, I think this is worth a watch. It's another quick, fun one.
Yeah, and it's a little deal.
Take your 4 minutes. Have a look. It's pretty cool. All right. Then, thing, I guess in Spanish would just be La Cosa. La Cosa. Just like John Carpenter's La Cosa. So let's talk about the Last Winter first, because that's the one that I'm actually excited to talk about, El Último Invierno. I was not expecting this out of Larry Fessenden because he is a professional weirdo.
Yes.
Who stars in professionally weird films. And like the last thing he was in was that whole 1950s post-war ghost.
Yeah, the Brooklyn 45 deal.
Yeah. And so this is a fairly straightforward like movie film for theaters. And it feels like it has a budget and a lot more craftsmanship. Like I think it's fair to say he's more of like a punk band, you know, than he is a symphony. But like this is just a damn solid movie from every angle.
So, yeah,
I was impressed with this.
Punk is a good, I think, comparison because it's. I thought the craft on this was fantastic, but it doesn't have that level of like, you know, that button in Josie and the Pussycats that's like studio magic, right? Like it doesn't have that button, you know, that takes all that sands all the edges off. None of it's nerfed, you know. So it being a little sharper, a little harsher, a little whatever, I think works in its credit. We should probably say that this is a movie with a bunch of folks working for like an oil company, energy company, something like that, that want to drill in some part of like protected wilderness in Alaska. And so you got the drillers and a couple of environmentalists that are there to like make assessments. And there's something spooky going on. And also like everything's thawing because, you know, global warming and the world's dying. And conflict between people and then conflict between people and environment. And I think you get maybe the only good like Wendigo-ish story that conflict I've ever seen
between people and scary ass shit that
because it's like it's that sort of like a weird nebulous sort of monster, and this follows a couple of the tropes, because one of the things I've always thought is both interesting and difficult about like Wendigo mythology is that it's never consistent from one story to another, because like what's that Never Whistle After Midnight or whatever, that book, like even in that there's more than one story and they don't really share a lot in common, because I think it's one of those things where like the mythology of it, sort of like a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or a Yeti, like the mythology of it seems to vary regionally, and so it can kind of suit whatever. But I thought this one told a version that was really satisfying. And so like I was like, oh shit, once you kind of see the shape of that take form, it was like, oh, not only am I enjoying this, but I'm getting something I don't usually see. And especially when I do see it, is rarely represented in a way that I find compelling. And this pulled that off. So, yeah, I had a blast with this.
You know, like with Fessenden too, he's an interesting character because, like, he's been involved in so damn much stuff. And, like, you know, I love the Tales from Beyond the Pale thing they did. I think you can get it. I think they made a couple records of them. And it's got all of our, you know, all of our people in there. You know, it's like AJ's in there, Barbara's in there, and a bunch of other really, really good people. You know, fun radio plays and horror radio plays and things like that. And he'd do stuff like that. And then he would do kind of more schlocky things and just involved with everybody and their mother doing all kinds of different projects. Like, he's just kind of all over the damn place. Really kind of a cool, kind of a fun character. This was a lot more straightforward. I mean, I think on the overall, I think, and I don't want to be like, but it's like, I think there's a lot of ambition and a lot of try to get to a thing. There were definitely some parts where some of the limitations were like ever so slightly distracting, but like, I don't hold it against them though. I don't, it was like, oh, well, it just took me out of it. Like, no. It's still I still get what they're going for, you know, for sure. But it just kind of like, there were definitely a couple parts, the latter part where I'm like, it's like, ah, this is that meeting point of they can see what they want to do. And it's like, just they got to get us close and get to it. But like,
did you think so? The effects and stuff.
I mean, I thought they looked cool. I just sort of was like, you know, like the thing with the plane, I mean, is obviously that's difficult to do. You know, like, you know, how do you make it? How do you crash a plane when you can't afford to crash a plane? And mm-hmm. So, like, how do you do that? And you get kind of quick cuts and stuff like that, and the fire effect and stuff. Like, you know, I don't think that they were bad. I just sort of like, you could see the shape of the whole thing that they were trying mm-hmm. to do, and just at times it felt a little bit like they were having to cover over some things because of.
I mean, I think you see the strings, so to speak, sometimes.
Yeah, but not terrible. You know, again, not terrible. And then the only other thing too is like I really loved the buildup. I thought was great. The buildup was very interesting. I found it super compelling, and just in general, I thought it was really compelling. I kind of wish that the second half of it, as we start to lose people, and as it completely goes off the rails, that I wish there was a little bit more time to, like, when Connie Britton comes back in the thing and Lady is just like suffocating the dude and is laughing her crazy ass head off, and you're just like, I think a little more build up would make that more impactful. Like, it's impactful, it's fine, but and like it just kind of felt like they had a lot to do still, you know, and a little bit of a rushedness. All that being said, like the whole dynamic between Ron Perlman and the main scientist guy was great. The dynamic.
Perlman's a great jackass in this.
Well, and what's great about it too is he's showier, but then you strip away some of the show, but his core is still just like, oh, you're fucking with the people. He's constantly in my way. Like, all people are terrible.
It's the frustration of like when you fuck up something you've done a million times. And mm-hmm. you're like, what? I shouldn't be capable of not doing this right. I've done it too much. You know, like if you were to like tie your shoes and completely just fail, you would be like, no matter what, I think you'd just be like kind of annoyed. They're like, how did you do that? How did you manage mm-hmm. to fuck that up? You don't even think about it anymore. And he's having this thing of like, this is how it works. You show up, you sign the thing, the whatever's come in and we start. This should be, you know, he's rubber stamping this whole process. And the fact that any other aspect might have to be checked or double checked or take longer is just incomprehensible to him. So it's like this really relatable frustration, which makes him kind of the villain without being like mustache twirly much.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird balance. And I think he's nailing it.
Yeah. Cause he's mostly just like, we got, you know, like this is what we're here to do. And if you're going to stand in the way of us doing that, then we're not going to get along very well.
Yeah. And so like, I got a schedule and someone's going to chew my ass. Like,
here's what we're going to do. You're going to do what I tell you to do. He says it like a couple of times. So that's kind of interesting. And we have his nephew, right? Is there.
Yeah, and his nephew.
Is the dude from all of the Mike Flanagan stuff recently. Mm-hmm. So that was a familiar face in there. We've got Connie Britton, this luminescent as always, as the, you know, kind of jaded oil working person. And we have a couple of side characters. I felt like enough to sacrifice one occasionally. Mm-hmm. I think this benefits from like it's hitting the weather changing angle and that fear that like there's a cascade effect that can happen. Mm-hmm. Where it just suddenly goes all at once, only it's warm instead of cold like day after tomorrow. But then you also have the idea of the like the spirits of the land being disturbed and taking their revenge, but also that they can take the form of driving you insane and making you kill other people, or just straight dragging you off into the sky.
Or you like know? Kind of manifesting as like caribou. Like a stampede mm-hmm. of caribou. What are like? That reminds me. There's a point where one of the dudes is like in a tent looking at shit, and there's like a little like cyclone or something in the tent, and there's papers whipping around, and he's hearing the thundering of hooves or whatever, right? And he's all panicking and freaked out, and he like shoves his way out of the tent, and there's just nothing. And then he's like, and he looks down, and there's tracks. And I went, Boo. Because caribou, get it? I made myself laugh and I was like, I'm very clever. But like,
some of those shots, like, I couldn't.
They do those things really well, though. Yeah. And that's like, that was the thing that as I sat here watching this and enjoying it, I was like, will I be able to talk about this movie without mentioning the thing? And no, I cannot. So, one of the things that I was realizing, because I was really loving the look and like the craft of this, I thought, you've got a bunch of people isolated. Something's going wrong. They may be turning on each other, but there's an outside influence. That's very, like, on paper, that's a similar setup to the thing. But the way that they show us this isolation is done pretty much entirely the opposite way, which made this a much more interesting film for me. You have the camera is very fast. There are a lot of scenes where they do this like wild, like swoop and then like reverse pan to just like, you're looking at their little settlement and then all of a sudden you're just flying backwards to show the isolation of it. Whereas in the thing, you show that isolation by whenever they walk outside, there's just a wall of storm. So it just seems like there's nothing outside. This shows you that there's too much nothing outside. And then they're able to use that same camera movement to just be like, look how much we can swing around and we never hit anything because you're nowhere. And you get that same idea of almost there's the bigness of the isolation where, yeah, that moment where I forget that character's name is like running down the hallway and it seems to be impossibly long.
Yeah.
In the thing. And it takes you a second to notice, like, there's no way this is that long. And then it just keeps going. And you're like, that is so fucked and such a great visual representation of no matter where I go, no matter how far I run, I'm here. There's nothing outside of here, but it's done in a very kinetic way that makes it like you somehow have the same sense of people stuck in a small spot away from everyone without feeling cramped. You instead get the expanse to show that same predicament. And that was, I thought, really cool to go, oh, wow, you found a way to tell the same level of dread without having me go, well, I can compare this one-to-one with this other film that did it so well. Like, you stand on your own two feet as this separate thing. And I thought that made it really interesting to watch.
Yeah, and instead of it getting, like, deadly, deadly colder, it keeps getting warmer and warmer. And that's ominous, too. Yeah. And a really shitty time for us to watch this because we are having the weirdest non-winter weird we have winter. Ever had. But so this was 2006 was when this was made. And when we saw the first like overhead shot or like the very long dollying in toward the settlement, Jess and I both were like, drone shots. We got drone shots. Because we always say that for any time there's a drone shot in modern horror, because there always are
a couple.
And then we went, 2006. Do we have a film going drone that a Larry Fessenden production can afford in 2006? Or is this all like crane shots and dolly shots? Like,
but it's
shit.
Almost equally implausible to think of him having a helicopter.
Right.
Well, but it's also it was also shot in they're saying this is like they're saying this is Alaska, right? I mean, but it's but they shot it in Iceland because Alaska, the you know, the, everything's as Issa Lopez has found out in making True Detective, you have to shoot shit in Iceland and call it Alaska because shooting stuff in Alaska is a lot more difficult.
Because it turns out all the stuff you want to convey about how hard it is to be in Alaska is actually hard.
It's actually the problem, And so, she shot a lot of True Detective in Iceland, but then this one, they did the same thing. And, you know, like, the Icelandic Film Council and all that kind of stuff, and we've seen plenty of stuff that they've been involved in and funded and whatever. But they, you know, I would imagine some cranes and dolly stuff without having to break the bank necessarily. I mean, it would totally check out. I mean, totally check out. If that's
that makes
you know,
sense,
they shot a lot of stuff.
The subsidies that.
Yep. Yeah.
It's oh, like, yeah.
Civilized countries have for the arts. Yes.
And like we used to have in the Twin Cities, which I miss, because movies used to happen here too, and they got rid of the subsidies, and that got rid of the movies.
We could have been Toronto, damn it.
Could have been.
Could have been a cowboy as well.
Or Batman.
So like,
Batman.
But what I really appreciate is just like, you know, the going for it. I mean, I don't know, I'd say that a lot these days, but like, I really love that. Like, you're going to try to, the scale of it is just, you're going to try to get as much of it on there as you possibly can. And like I said, I mean, I kind of feel like that last little bit felt a little rushed, but on the overall, like, I appreciate that they were aiming for a really big scale thing. Like, and they were really going for that thing.
It's like, ambitious. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, that's what that, you know, I certainly think that's a really cool, I don't know. I think there's something really great about that. Actually, that's just sort of like, just really trying to go for that scale. Like, what was that? There's that Ocean movie that should have been a big goddamn deal. Was that Treat Williams was in it?
No.
Oh, what the? Deep Rising. Is it Deep Rising? And I think you're right. I think that's the one that yeah. If there's any justice in the world, that should have been a huge failure, huge success. It should have been like should have been an amusement park ride, like just the jet skis in the school alone, like, oh, fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And it would have been just fabulous in every which way you could do it, and it's so great and awesome. And it's just sort of like, and they think that's the scale they're going for this, like we're just gonna go for it and like make this big fucker. And it's just like, and I really love. I just wish that they had a little more bandwidth on the tail end of it, just to kind of just a little more space. But otherwise, I mean, everybody's great. You know, Connie Britton's always great. And so yeah, it's just and it was so wild watching this too, because, you know, watching True Detective, and it's like, it's kind of a lot of the same stuff, where it's like science outpost, inhospitable environment, tough situation, maybe pissing off some spirits. Like, it's kind of like there's some similar things going on. I thought that was fascinating, being like, this was 2006, and, you know, True Detective is right now, and it's just like, yeah, that's kind of cool too. So yeah, all things being equal, like, good job, Larry.
Yeah.
It also made me think of, like, the, well, it feels like Underwater and Leviathan and Alien, you know, as much as The Thing, because anytime you've got that kind of isolated place where people can't really leave because the environment's actively trying to kill them.
Sure.
You get that. Like, this made me think too of Out of Darkness, which I hope you guys can see soon, because it's...
Yeah, I want to see that badly.
That's like a group.
I should like to see it well, but yeah.
Yeah. It's a group of like cavemen, basically, who just being alive on a regular night is the thing, right? And so once you have a threat, then it gets even worse. So this felt like that. Like, they could have just had their snowmobile break down and have to walk to the next town and have him get his boot pulled off, right? Yeah. And that would have killed him dead, certainly. But then there's also an evil spirit out there that's working against him too. It's just like, fuck.
No,
it's tense. Yeah.
You just said something too that was another cool thing about this, is like, oftentimes when we've seen those, like Yellow Brick Road was an egregious example, and other ones where you have that, like, out in the woods, out in the forest, you know, whatever kind of deal, and you know, you're like, oh, we're just slowly losing our minds, we're slowly going crazy, I'm seeing stuff that's not there, woody woody woody. And it's like, oftentimes it just plays dumb and silly and just overwrought and ridiculous, and just doesn't play worth a damn. And because it just becomes so much more acting face or whatever. This one, with the exception of the cook lady, which, I mean, I think it's a little more time there, but the by and large, seeing stuff that's not there, and then Ron Perlman just tear assing off onto the thing, and then there are a guy kind of meandering out and seeing stuff and hearing stuff, and they underplay so much of that, so it doesn't get cheesy or silly, because that can play so silly, of that kind of like, oh, now we're gonna do the drug scene where somebody ate some drugs, drug things, and now I'm like, ooh,
they play the different some 10 weed and now they're hallucinating. Yes,
yeah, they get 10 fucking minutes, and it's like, then so it just wasn't any of that, which is the level of restraint it takes to not go down that road. So, you know, they did a lot right in putting this together, and it was so bug-netting to see this pop up on Amazon. I was like, oh, I think I remember that being a thing that existed. Well, the son of a gun. So yeah, cool.
Yeah, this is not something I'm sure you guys do the same thing where you see some clickbait thing that's like 10 under appreciated horror gems or some shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Look at it and go like, for Christ's sake, like Day of the Dead.
Like, yeah,
that's you consider that a deep cut, like the sequel to probably the best zombie movie of all time. And you know, you kind of go, but like, I don't think I've seen this movie on any lists like that. You know, even the ones that I find kind of like, oh, I sort of respect this one. It's got a few deep pulls. Like, this isn't something that has crossed my radar that I can recall as like, oh yeah, there's this movie that most people haven't seen, but I thought it was kind of cool. You know, and I don't think it comes up, and it's this, you know, I feel like I'm saying this a lot lately, but this will be another movie that when people ask like, oh, what's a cool movie I probably haven't seen? Like, this will go on that list now, because odds are people haven't seen it, and not in like a hipster, like, you probably never heard of them, but just, yeah, this was a small thing that, you know, there's no reason you would have heard of this most likely. So yeah, this would be another fun treat, I think, for people. And it's got at least one actor you'd be familiar with, I think. So that makes it a little more relatable. So yeah, it's, God, this is a good time. I appreciate that it was going for something different and surprisingly like big in scope and pulled it off pretty well. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. I really enjoyed the score too. I wanted to make sure to point that out. And there are just parts of this that are genuinely suspenseful, parts that are genuinely eerie, and parts that are actually scary too, which is impressive. You know, but there was plenty of just unease. Like, this does a really good job of unsettling you. So yeah, definitely I'm very impressed with this thing. I would say for me it was like a 9 out of 10. Abominable Perlmans.
Man, did you guys see?
Excellent, Joshua.
Someone posted a thing that made me laugh, which was the idea that it's a crime. There's never been a movie where Ron Perlman played Will Ferrell's dad. Oh, true. And once you think of it, you can't go like, oh, you're right. That's just such a natural fit. Yeah, like, huh? But anyway. Yeah, I really liked this. I'm right in that same neighborhood. I gave it an 8.5. I think this is really cool. And I kind of like the little rough around the edges look of it. It just feels a little more gritty, and that's cool. And yeah, and it gives you, you know, some mythology and the spookiness from areas you don't normally get in a film. So yeah, yeah, I'll be recommending this. And yeah, so 8.5 out of 10. what's wrong? Did you like the monster? No, it was a real drag. Hi-yo.
Can I get that wind to go, please?
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, no. Sakes.
We're all going to end up in comedy jail.
but it's just, were you off your meds? Fuck. Yeah. So I mean, so it's weird to be the low man on the totem pole, I guess, because I didn't really think this was cool quite a bit. I mean, I really think it was awesome. So it's gonna be weird to be 7.5 out of 10. But like, you know, I mean, not about with M and number to see. You know, just sort of is as it is. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was really cool. I liked how weirdly the timing of this was kind of a trip. Like, it's like with True Detective just wrapping up and kind of basically being a lot of the same kind of themes and stuff. So yeah, I'll say 7.5 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10. You know, fellas, if you just don't the fuck go to this inhospitable, god awful place, then maybe you figure out another way to make the power go, like with the sun or the wind or hydrogen or any other number of things.
Maybe you survive.
Yeah, then you also don't get deaded by a big old to do.
Wise advice: never go somewhere money doesn't matter.
Yeah, there you go.
That's how you know there's no hope if you get fucked. So
yeah, I can buy my way out of this. Like, no, sir, you cannot.
Like, I don't know, I'm out of my element, Donnie.
Fiddlesticks.
Because here in the Arctic, they'll take you away into the sky, but they won't take American Express.
Oh,
it's true.
Wow.
Yeah. I need a quick break and a walk around in a water bottle, folks, and then we can come back and talk about skeletons and closets.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Excellent. Back in a moment.
So next up, we have Skeletons in the Closet, or Esqueletos en el Armario, which sounds like a great Spanish language children's book, I feel like.
It works.
Like bananas and pajamas. Vajazzled
pajamas. I was just going to say, boy, that's a whole lot happening there.
It's easy for me to say.
Yeah, right?
One of these is on a higher shelf.
How do I break down the plot of Skeletons in the Closet?
Oh, good for luck.
I would love for you to explain it to me, and I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Well, we'll kind of go through it. So we have a family, mom, dad, kid. Kid has cancer. They're having trouble affording her treatment, which is weird, not to editorialize overly much in the summary section, but because this family lives in a very nice house, and they have two cars, and they both have jobs, and I don't know.
Their
daughter has extracurricular activities. Like, this is not a poverty-stricken family, but anyway. No,
they are living in, like, six-figure income life.
So then they need to come up with $57,000 so that their daughter can get her next round of chemo, because the hospital will not treat her until they pay up front, which is not really a thing that happens. And then he's got a brother who has done prison time, who has played in probably by Cuba Gooding Jr. And the brother refers him to a business associate of his known as Miguel. And he's like, oh, Miguel. And he said, yeah, we call him Crackhead Miguel. And I thought at that point, perhaps you don't. He's like, oh, what a hit. He's just like, oh, what a colorful sobriquet, you know. And
that's his first move.
Yeah. He's like, well, please introduce me to one of your sketchy loan shark friends who will make this so much worse.
Not
and
like
I won't
I'll
tell
sell
my wife
car.
About any of it. Yeah. Or the house or whatever. Or go to a different hospital.
Right.
And so then we also have Psychic Lady, who is his second move. It's like, we're going to go to a psychic and she's going to help. And she's like, I can't help you, but there is one in the back who used to work as a commander on a U-boat, and he is going to be the guy. And so we go back, and goddamn it, dude, O'Keir is back there. And
you got to be kidding me.
No, I wish I was. And they're like, so we have the mob boss sending out goons is one thing that's happening. We have the whole spirit journey with the guy that's happening. And then we have wife having visions of Santa Muerta and her mom's ghost. And all three of these movies are operating on different tracks. And it does that thing that Perpetrator did, where they're constantly explaining shit to each other and never making any sense.
Even if they were both in the room.
Yeah. We are drowning in exhibition, but it's not illuminating anything.
Exhibition.
Yeah. Masturbation.
Okay. I mean, you're not wrong. Also, bothered me the whole time. My Spanish is shakier than I think both of yours. But isn't Santa Muerte, isn't that just Saint Death?
Yep.
So, that's not a saint, right? Are we all coming to an agreement on that?
I figured it was just some kind of mythological figure, like a Santeria.
Maybe. Somebody it just seems like they're like, ah, yes, this is Saint Death that you pray to for if you're on the shady side of things, I think is sort of the way the brother describes it, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, he watches over people like us that are sort of, off to one side of society. And it's like, I guess.
People like us, though.
You have this concept that you fully made up, that you're going to put your faith in, as opposed to a thing that at least is allegedly based on an idea. I could make up a God to watch over me too, but I wouldn't leave $100 on a mannequin in a store for that.
Yeah. That was of a thousand different things. That thing that, why does that still stand out in my memory? It's being
cause it's fucking bug nutty. That is just insane.
Because they're supposed to be broke. And I can understand.
Well, brother isn't supposed to be broke necessarily, is he? He's just not rich, right?
Yeah, I can understand, I got $100, but I don't got $37,000.
Right, yeah.
At the same time, it just feels weird. Like, either money is a thing to you or it isn't.
Well, it's such a mishmash of, like, rather, like, okay, we've got a straightforward thriller in Oh Money, Too Dangerous Person, right? There's a million movies that just have that, and that's enough. Plenty of episodes of The Sopranos are that, you know. That can work. Then you've got, like, Vision Quest, Fortune Teller. I don't remember how that's supposed to help, really. And then
you're trying to figure out mom's, or he says that this is a guy who, like, can get you to the guy who will grant wishes for you.
Yeah. So, like, I guess that's, like, one thing. And then you end up also getting wrapped up in mom having visions of veiled woman around daughter, a specter of death, or, you know, maybe a callback to your Santa Muerta or whatever.
And, like, ultimately, the gangster plot goes nowhere.
Absolutely nowhere.
And the Santa Muerta plot goes nowhere because the Vision Quest plot is just the search for the Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
And it pretty much fixes everything with just the minor downside that mother doesn't get to live, but that seemed to be an outcome no matter what. So, yeah, I mean, getting into the plot details of this would be insane because there's a lot of it. And none of it adds up, but none of it makes any sense for people doing what people do. There's also, like, 1999's finest CGI in this, like,
oh god,
sub Sharknado special effects happening in this, and
everything that is on fire is using about a 3-second repeating GIF to be on fire. And, like, there's budget problems for things, and there's times that, like, well, even in, you know, last winter, it's like, yeah, they didn't have the most money in the world, and you can kind of see through a bit of it, but, like, I'm into the story there, and you go, okay, I understand. And this is one where you go, come on, guys, like, you needed to write something different entirely if you had so little money.
Yeah, like, that is all you can do for your burning house. Maybe
you have to just do something else, like, because I had time to sit and think of, like, in the flashback of dad allegedly dying in the house fire or whatever, I had time to sit and think, that poor actor standing in that room going, oh, and then, like, crouching a little bit to, like, indicate he's being crushed by the roof. And you're like, there's not enough effects in the world to not make that not look stupid. And that why then? Just don't do it tastefully, shooting the outside of the house or something and just hearing a crash, at least, like, that's better than showing it badly. Like,
I mean, I get the impression from looking at this dude's IMDb, the director, that he is just one of those mercenary shoestring filmmakers who just, like, cobble together a thing, shoot a thing, get a good looking poster.
I'd rather do that than an office job. I get it. But, like,
yeah. And I don't mean, like, for the sheer love of filmmaking kind of thing. I feel like it's,
right, yeah,
okay, I can sell the rights to this thing and kind of do the William Castle, you know, pre-sell it based on the poster and find, like, a couple of name actors that I can afford. Probably not even the famous horror, like, the horror famous folks. Probably can't afford them. So, like, who isn't busy? It's like, well, Richard Simmons is free, and then Cuba Gooding
Jr. This is a weird,
you know.
Like, the casting in this was like, okay, I can afford Terrence Howard and Cuba Gooding Jr. because they're, like, their price has gone down enough. I can afford Udo Kier because his price has never gotten high enough. And that puts you in this weird sweet spot for the cast of, like, what can be afford to be in this. Did you guys get the feeling that this was, like, one of the latter, like, Hellraiser movies? As far as, like, the look and the dialogue and how, like, they're always, like, a sort of crime drama that they then go, ah, we'll put Pinhead in for 3 minutes. And this was like, ah, stick a ghost in there and we'll make it. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of this. Well, then also, too, like, not only does the plot make no sense, but everybody in this movie is acting in a different movie. Like, like, you have, like, Cuba Gooding Jr., who is, like, playing in that kind of the dramedy movie. And then you have, like, Terrence Howard in whatever the hell movie he's in. And then you have the spouse lady who is in a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
And you have Udo Kier, who's just flown in from Jupiter. Right. Which, I mean, okay.
So, I mean, he's flown in to be Udo Kier.
Yeah, and, like, in his defense, he plays that character at the beginning one way, and then once it kind of changes, he does kind of become different. And it's like, yeah, hats off to you for having some – like range.
Good and on he had nothing to do. Like, it's not entirely his fault.
Yeah, he just is like, stand over there and be you. Like, okay, fair enough. But the shop owner lady, like everybody, the mob thing, everybody in this thing is in a different movie. And so then, like, so then you take that along with the plot making no goddamn sense. And so it's sort of like, then you kind of just trying to piece it together and trying to figure out. Every time somebody says some just nonsense, and there's like, they say it with so much logic, and you're like, what? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, and then at one point, the Terrence Howard and the wife lady are talking, and she says something like, we have to do this because we can't do this because we have to do this other thing. And then he's like, well, and he says, well, talk to a fortune teller, and there's a deal, and there's like a devil, and there's a spirit, and that, whatever else. And she doesn't just go, you've lost your fucking mind. She just kind of goes, where is this?
Well, and like, tell me. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and the
same thing with the mob, though, too, where she's like, who the fuck are all these goons at my house? She's like, well, I had to get money somehow. And she's like, well, you finish dealing with it. I'm like, that's your answer? It's just like, okay, I'll go. I'm annoyed. You do the dishes. Like, it's that same level of annoyance.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, and then on top of it, but then on top of that, like everybody, like said, everything's so matter of fact that as you're going along, you're like, I'm the crazy person. I'm the one who must have missed something because very, very clearly, like they have, I'm the crazy person. I had to have missed something. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, I'm not going to rewind. There's no damn way I'm rewinding back. You can force me to do that.
Right.
But like, at the same time, it's sort of like, okay, well, they're pretty assured that there's some logic here. So, all right, let's kind of see how we do. And like, no, still no logic, unfortunately. Like, all right, well, at some point, this is going to just kind of do a Hugh Jackman and Van Helsing and just become bug nutty and over the top and just nonsensical and silly. Like, no, we're not gonna go that way either. Like, we're gonna bring in this sort of like child tragedy thing, and as you know, the X-ray thing. I told Kristen that was like there doesn't appear to be any cancer. Like,
did you see the grape size, the orange sized thing in her head?
Like, yeah,
the enormous. I'm like, I've seen my mom's X-rays from when she had a brain tumor. It looked exactly like that. It's like, that is the one where you go, we have bad news. Like, that's
it's
the
just
before.
That they shot those two scenes back to back because they had the set for that
like,
day.
But all you have to do is have her like put her, you know, they could have done the Simpsons thing where they don't notice the crayon of Homer's nose because his thumb's over it the whole time. they could have just not had that one on there. The other ones are some other bullshit. I was like, yes, this is the level of quality control this movie has. It's fucking brilliant.
But then you get into the third act of this, and that's why I'm kind of like, it's like, okay, well, this is just going to lean into Van Helsing territory and just go completely silly and over the top. But instead of going silly and over the top, it just becomes like epically self-serious and saying things that don't make any sense. And so you're trying to piece together this like previous deal and like the sacrifice thing. And the debt will be paid, but the rules on that are not real clear. But like the guy was involved, but he wasn't involved. But like somebody else, they knew about it, and so then they kind of like kept it a secret from who? Well, don't really know. And then it's like, and then you keep going this back and forth thing, and then Udo Kier's like, but I'm the devil, and like, are you the devil? Like, no, not really. And it's like, okay, well,
yeah.
And so there's just a lot of that. Like, I spent the last 30 minutes of this trying to find the shape of the plot, and I was like, I'm like this doesn't feel like a Roger Corman thing where it's just so silly. It's just so silly.
Well, because those are silly, like they're fun.
Sleazy.
Yeah, like it's not, this is not a, doesn't feel like that trauma thing or that Corman thing. It's just, it's not even
the full moon thing.
Yeah, and it's like, I was gonna say, even the full moon, how schlocky.
It's Asylum.
Yeah, this is much more. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, right. Perfect call, Josh. Yeah, like
Platinum and Dunes or Asylum or whatever.
Yeah, and if you watch one of those ones and you're like they're going to try to sell me on this mishmash of a script and a story and everything, and none of it jives, and like, but they're going to be all self serious about it, then it has to be fun, or it has to be silly, or it has to be tawdry, or it has to be one of those. But in this way, it's just sort of both self-serious and then dull, and you don't get that third act takeoff. It just kind of just sits, and like nothing like occurs really.
It just like, convolutes instead of taking off.
Yeah, and like, and then to the piece of resistance at the whole thing is like, Terrence Howard is like, yeah, God bless him. I don't wish him any ill will or anything, but his level of like, just his level of, what would you say? Like disinterest in everything happening around him. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my daughter's sick. Yeah. That's a, we got to get on that. Like,
have you ever done the thing where like you've been feeling not great, right? But you still are like, I'm going to go to work. You know, I'm not going to take time off because it's just kind of some bullshit. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of relying on DayQuil in the morning and NyQuil at night. And then you have that morning where you wake up and you take the swig of NyQuil and go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And then you go like, I got to get through work. It looks like he did that. He just seems like he's just barely staying awake for this whole process. Like,
yeah, at no point does his range move like at all, to the degree at which, like, why didn't you have Cuba Gooding Jr. in the main role then?
Because he seemed excited to be there.
Because he had a little
Oscar-nominated Cuba Gooding Jr. I mean, Terrence Howard might have gotten nominated for Hustle & Flow, but
I think he did. I think, but I think Cuba Gooding Jr. I think won.
Well, either one has done good work. Like, it's just maybe they just realized what they were in and, you know, decided that was how much effort they'd put into it. You know, I don't know. I can't
say. Yeah, who knows? It's hard to say. It's just, but it's just one of those things. Like, he was the one that really stood out to me. It's just like, just that's just so incredibly inert. And it was just sort of like, and that, and the thing with the lady, the spirit keeps showing up. And like, at no point does that make a lick of sense with this curse thing. And they're like, so is it a curse? But like, it's only valid with a coupon on Thursdays. Or like, I don't understand like how, because the curse thing seems to come and go like at any given point. If you can just kind of do whatever, then why doesn't it? That's just sort of like, it's the thing with the, it's like that thing with the M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Happening, where it's sort of like, oh, well, then nature just starts, you know, causing you to just start killing yourself, whatever else. Like, then why wouldn't every mammal just swallow their own tongue? Like, it doesn't make any sense to move to an elaborate production number of killing yourself. Like, you stop breathing. That's it.
Well, like, still wants attention.
No, I know, but it's sort of like, but you can't. Well, you can't explain it. It's just, it doesn't. It's so silly. It's
Sure. But I just like, yeah. It is purely just for spectacle. And like, what the fuck?
And then that was the thing. Yeah, just.
So ultimately, like, the deal with the curse seems to be, mom had
the shinning
cancer when she was a kid, right? Mm-hmm. And then her dad was going to sacrifice a pregnant lady to save her. And then they kind of got cold feet about the sacrifice and didn't do it. So the cancer passed on to younger girl, or to daughter when daughter was born. And so, yeah, I guess. And yes. Did I fall asleep while I was watching this, or does dad turn back up? And he's
he shows up all of a sudden.
Okay, yeah. So this movie is so disjointed and overstuffed that I frequently felt like I was falling asleep and missing pieces, or falling asleep and dreaming disjointed. A different plot line. But yeah, that happened. So nobody should watch this. I mean, you go through this guy's IMDb, and every movie has like a... Well, he's done a lot of movies with Michael Jai White. Frequently, Mickey Rourke is in there. Jeff Fahey is in one. You know, Lawnmower Man himself. Mm-hmm. Dylan McDermott is in one of them. Like, every single one has some recognizable marquee name and like 3.0 on IMDb.
Well, it's just like front-loading the...
Please may I first, though. My favorite of them is Ace and the Christmas Miracle. And that stars Stephen Chase and Brandi Roderick, but starring the voice of John Lovitz as Ace the Talking Horse, as it says very proudly on the poster.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah, so I think you know what you're getting into. And if you're in college, like, no, there are movies like this that are fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly. Fun. Yeah, this is not fun.
It's a mess. So, like, this is like a 2 out of 10. This is crackhead Miguel of the East Hampton Miguels.
Yeah, I gave this the 1 for, you know, like taking the lens cap off and stuff. But this is, you know, having just like the one or two names in all the movies is the weird front-loaded and cynical version of, oh shit, this person that was in our crappy little movie got wicked famous, so now we're going to re-release it at Walmart for $5 with their name real big on the cover.
Oh, sure.
Except right. This one is like
5 minutes they're in.
Yeah. And except now it's like, okay, we're going to make a crappy movie, but let's put this person so we can put their big name on the cover, you know, cause they've gotten into the point where we can afford them. And it's just, it seems like a very cynical move, you know, and who knows motivations or whatever, but it certainly just feels gross and a way to try to hide a terrible movie that certainly we would not have watched had we not looked it up and been like, what the fuck, Cuba Gooding Jr. and Terrence Udo Kier. It worked. It did exactly what they wanted it to do. It made us watch this movie. And
even as we went, I'll bet this is terrible.
And then it's like, sure enough, you know, like once again, we're the Hawaiian Punch guy, you know, and like I even said, like, I'm kind of glad we're doing this weird out of left field movie that we know nothing about or have no reason to watch, because that was something we did more, I think, earlier on. Like, fuck it, let's watch this dumb thing that I saw a trailer for. And, you know, we saw some weird shit that way. And we don't usually do that because we try not to waste our time as much anymore.
Right.
But like, I was like, ah, that's kind of fun. That's refreshing to just be like, fuck it, let's see what this, you know, probably would have been direct to VHS type movie is. Oh, right, man, those sucked. It's just, that's too bad. So yeah, like one is the amount of dollars you should pay to see this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, you don't, I don't ever really feel comfortable anymore saying, being like, this feels like one of those tax dodge movies. But it's like, because
money laundering something.
Yeah, because like, yeah, one person's tax dodge movie is another person's ability to get their name in a credit, whether or not it's good or not. So it's like, you know, I don't feel good about ever saying like, you know, like everybody involved in this is just sort of like trying to like sink money into an LLC that they can't come after or whatever. I was like, I don't think that's true. And so it's sort of like, but at the same time, that could be the onus behind the people who put the money through on this part of it or that part of it, or, you know, who knows? It just feels like, it feels too much like that to not think like it could have something related to that. But at the same time, it's like, I don't feel good about saying that about every single person involved. All that being said, like, you know, had this been black and white and made 35 years ago, then Mr. Sands Theater would have done it. So yeah. this is a that kind of a movie without any discernible fun whatsoever. So yeah, I'll say 1.5 out of 10. Just a 1.5 because of Udo Kier's little skip that he does holding the snake walking away.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
and he was like, "Oh, Eric, let's go this way," and he just sort of like, and then he just sort of.
I like that little jump. The bit with him walking with the snake. Where I'm like, you can tell, like, because it goes long enough, and he's goofing around enough to be like, he's legit not afraid of that snake, and is just having fun walking around with a cool snake. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of tickled me. I found that to be charming. So, you know, and you know, I don't know. Beyond that, it just sort of like it's just a. This is a whole thing. So yeah, 1.5 out of 10. So,
yeah, the Udo Kierness, like especially in those last scenes, it hints at a movie that has much more of a like waxwork kind of feel to it.
Yeah. And I would like to see.
Just not what we got.
Give me Udo Kier in one of like the iconic Vincent Price roles, and I bet we could have a really good time. You know. Like there's room to have him be the weirdo that shows up and is maybe the evil businessman, maybe the devil, maybe something in between. Like that's cool. Like I could get down with that. Hell, give him a little mustache.
Why would the devil not be an evil businessman? Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, bummer on that one, Yos.
Yeah.
Let's speaking of bummers, let's talk about Barbarians or Los Bárbaros. Barbarians is kind of the story of a home invasion. The first hour of it is just awkward, cringe, farce-ish thing. That is just a kind of a nebbishy guy played by Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones, which is weird. But he kind of looks like Junkie Frodo, like Frodo halfway to Gollum kind of guy.
Junkie Frodo.
Yes, chunky.
He does look like someone that
not chunky Frodo.
Yeah, he looks like someone that should get a little more sunlight.
Yeah. I mean, I believe he's Irish, so, you know, it happens.
Yeah, that's what I said.
So we have, like, Alpha Guy, who is the land developer, who's come into the place where they have, like, a very sacred site and is building his, like, little development. We've got his fiance, who is pregnant, and that's, like, her big announcement. We've got Nebushi Guy, who is just constantly feeling emasculated by everything that happens around him and is so insecure it hurts. We've got Artist Wife, who is footing all of the bills for the family and has made a work of art for the new development, and so they get to have the house, or do they? And and then we have the home invaders who come in. And let me just run down real quick. This movie gives us this is the toolkit this movie is working with. We have, like, evil land developer, soft-spoken fiance who's a little creepy, this family of farmers who feels wronged by developer, ancient Gaelic monument with potential, like, druids and whatever, emasculated dude, the home invasion, like, a vial of ayahuasca, and at least three shocking secrets that people are keeping from each other. And this movie is so fucking dull by the end of it. Once you get into act three, you go, is this going to come up with something more interesting than him trying to have a peck and paw moment? And it just doesn't.
Yeah, the peck and paw thing is pretty direct.
Very honestly, frustrating. It legitimately takes 50 of this movie's 90 minutes to get to that, the invasion part too, though. And it's just like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, I was just trying to run down the plot, but I got a little bit caught up in criticizing it.
The way you ran it down, though, made me go, oh, shit, you just described Smallville. Like, if you make evil real estate guy Lex Luthor and, you know, Nebushi guy Clark Kent, who then has to Superman out at the end, like, yeah. It makes about as much sense with no one finishing sentences or telling each other very obvious things that would resolve all their dilemmas with a conversation and not end up with, you know, weird home invasions by the monster of the week. Like, this is about Smallville level writing. Like, and I enjoyed Smallville because it was just good enough for what I needed it to be, which was something to watch with the Smurfs because we had nothing to do. But
now,
like,
I'm looking at the character names. So I hear, like, Adam, I feel like you have a secret, Adam. Chloe, yeah. Or Ava, I would never keep a secret from you. Adam, tell me your secret. Ava, I don't have a secret. Anyway. One of them is Chloe, so.
That's true. Hopefully not getting, like, weird vagina brandings.
You know, you really need to work on your vagina branding. Like, it's the way that it's positioned in the market is really not working for you.
Oh boy, I'm not even sure where to go with that, but yeah, I found this to be, like, I'll give developer guy credit for being instantly, like, the most punchable face I've seen in a while.
He's, like, very Andrew Tate.
Exactly. He is so completely a bro, and also very much the shitty older brother that has to kind of swing dick in front of females, and also the kind of guy that would say females, right. You know, which is, like, instantly just is like nails on a chalkboard to me. And, like, he's like, I got to make sure everybody can tell I'm, you know, stronger than my younger brother here. To what end?
Are they brothers? And that's, like, is that the deal?
I thought that wasn't it? Isn't he the older brother?
I couldn't tell if he was.
Oh, I thought he was. Maybe I'm misreading the whole thing. I thought they explicitly said that. And that was, like, why he had this whole thing set up where they got this big chance. And that was, you know, I think also why he was comfortable just fucking him over, you know, and, like, cause he just knew he wouldn't fight back cause he's been bullying him his whole life. So, like,
I think they were like lifelong people that they, you know, kind of like two families that had the houses near each other. Cause they that was kind of the way that I read it. You know, so I don't know if they were necessarily, you know, like, related.
But it's got that, like, energy, I guess, at least.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, boy, did I have a different experience watching this.
Oh, cool.
Oh,
what was yours?
Because, like, yeah, I thought it was awesome. I really, like, I, you know, the main guy, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a little bit of that kind of, like, a bang kind of vibe about him. Yeah. But I don't think that it's necessarily, not like, say, like, it's justified or that he should, okay, it's okay being kind of like a shit ass about things. But at the same time, it's sort of like, I also don't think it's too much to ask for to have been treated ever so slightly better until you go along later on and you're like, oh, well then, except for the fact that he like slept with this lady, like, yeah, yeah, that kind of stuff. And you're like, he's like, oh, so his whole thing of like, I'm a nice guy. Like he might just be like a guy. He's like an evil guy, but he's like, not like without fault either.
Yeah. So he's the like, slippery underhanded shit like that so many of us beta cucks are.
Yeah, but like how the whole thing kind of comes together, this whole thing about with the family farm and whatever else, like there's a thousand of these kind of stories anymore because, you know, people mm-hmm. of our folks' generation are getting older and they're either selling out of businesses or they are closing up shop or they're selling them off or they're whatever. So there's a thousand of these stories where there's people that have done them like correctly, and then there's a lot of people that haven't. There's a reason why there's, you know, when someone the unexpected sad thing happens anymore, it go on GoFundMe sometime and like, you know, bum yeah. yourself out to some degree about like how somebody just didn't do their goddamn will correctly or line up their shit the right way. Then all of a sudden, people have to figure out how to pay for a funeral. When Kristen's uncle unexpectedly passed away last year, there's a lot of confusion about paperwork and ownership of this thing and that thing and all kinds of stuff. And it's just like, so yeah, there's just like even rich people, poor people, everybody in between, like there's just this like rash epidemic of this kind of mess. And so like this idea that like, you know, like, oh, they went to court and like all the stress was too much for him. Oh, fucking horseshit. I'm sure he had a few of his arteries that are 95% blocked to begin with. He probably didn't have enough water that morning. Came up, went to two flights of stairs, and then just sort of like that was his time. And it's sort of like this. And so this idea, much like any vengeance thing ever, is like there's no real reason for it. Mm-hmm. And so like you get this like lethal threat, like to the, you know, to the one end thing. It's like, what is your plan, man? Like, you know, this is the you, there's no. Your plan does not have an outcome unless your plan is just murder. Unless you want to be Michael Myers, then fine.
Right.
That's the plan. But beyond that, like you don't have, there's no exit strategy here. It's sort of like, you know, sort of like breaking into a bank and then welding all the doors shut. Like, well, what's your,
well, yeah, you can't have someone sign over the property to guy in mask and like run away and never be found.
The contract have some red stuff on it. What is that? Like, oh, that's blood.
Well, but also like you'd have to have your real name on it. Why are you wearing a mask if they're going to literally write, they're going to sign the thing over to you.
They wanted to. They weren't trying to get him to sign over the land. They wanted.
But isn't that
to,
his out?
They
at
wanted
the end?
To humiliate him and have him. Well, that's with the couple, but with the home invasion folks, it seems like they wanted to scare him and force him to make the humiliating video.
I guess.
And then, like, admit that what he had done. So that nobody in
to ruin his reputation.
Him.
Well, to ruin his reputation because it's supposed to be this like enclave of like, you know, kind of rich people thing, and then like, you know, like the nowadays the kind of influencers wellness kinds of, you know, tax dodges. You know, talk about tax dodges. You know, this kind of stuff that celebrities and public figures get involved in, whatever else. What they don't want to be involved in is like in Glass Onion with Kate Hudson's character, where she just keeps getting associated with like really bad things, and like just like ruins her everything.
Do you
and
think
like,
a sweatshop was just a place where they made sweatpants?
Yeah, it's like I call them, I can see them. Like, we'll stop looking at things. But it's like, so I think that was kind of like the thing of being like publicly humiliating them to the degree at which it's going to poison any association with any kind of big money, whatever else, and it's just going to like crumble the whole thing. And that's kind of like, that seems like the revenge. Like, it's not necessarily to like kill them as much as it is to sort of like crumble this, like this facade that the kid and the cousin, I guess, that they think is what caused the dad to die, which, I mean, ultimately maybe there's a little bit of a stress factor, but I mean, come on.
It's also just silly.
Yeah. And so like, but intermixed with this, they're walking into this domestic mess And that's one of the things I really dug about it, is that like how all that stuff comes together is like, you have the guy treating his friend poorly, this kind of domineering kind of thing. You have the moral high ground girlfriend lady who also slept with the friend. And it's like, and then you have, meanwhile, you have, and you have the artist lady who, the actress, I can't think of her name. She's the one who was in Maria Full of Grace, which if you ever want to just ruin your fucking day, it's an amazing movie, but it is such a bummer. That's where she's from. Originally, that was her first movie thing, was that. And then like you have her whole deal. And like you're talking about Forest for the Trees, like this gigantic house and all this amenities and all this kind of stuff, whatever else. And it's like, but you're the artist and you're kind of above the thing and you're going to all this level of this, the implied importance. And it's sort of like she comes across as like the level-headed adult, but really she's not, because ultimately like this house of cards is predicated on this passive inflated ego thing. And it's sort of like, so you have all these like all these chess pieces kind of moving around the thing, and then it's sort of like, and then you kind of then in come the invaders or whatever else, and it's sort of like, but who is the real perpetrator of the crime, as it were? And it's sort of like, is it these like kind of like band of fools that have more money than sense and have kind of like dumbed their way into something that really there should have been a lot more thought put into it? And he says to the guy, like, oh, I really loved your father, whatever else. Like, he might think that might actually be true. But it's sort of like, but at the same time, it reminds me of the people, the developer assholes who bought the building where our friend John had his pottery studio in East Austin forever. And when he had passed away, they had to kind of take downsize and then ultimately the thing, like, oh, we want to, like, they, I remember them selling his wife and a couple of their people that worked there for 20 something years, like, oh, we want to honor the building or whatever else. Like, they kept part of a wall, you know, like, they didn't honor shit. Same thing as those assholes did in Tempe, in Old Town Tempe. Like they didn't honor nothing because it's inconvenient for, you know, corporate types who can't, you know, the ear asshole from the ear hole when it comes to anything that has any longevity. So it's like this idea, like, oh, I loved your father. He may believe that, but it's like putting up this like wellness enclave, like, you know, part of the future, all this sales pitch, like, you did it wrong, buddy. And so like, that's what makes that part of it so interesting. And so then the idea that's like, you know, barbarians, you know, the barbarians at the gate or whatever else. And it's like, but who are the barbarians? Is it these like more money than sense assholes that are trompsing over a thing and not giving due deference to the culture and the tradition of the thing? Is it the people that are invading the thing that they have no claim on fair and square, because laws are the way that they are, fair or not? Like they own the thing. That's what it is. Period. End of story. It's like, are they the barbarians of the thing or whatever else? Or is it just sort of like, is it just misplaced goals, misplaced greed, misplaced entitlement? And is that the real, is that the barbarian at the gate, so to speak? And so sort of like, that was the experience that I had.
It's a very different experience. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, like, sounds like a more fun experience.
Yeah.
Good.
I would have rather have watched the movie where either the movie where they end up taking the ayahuasca and like Gaspar Noé full on just devolving themselves over the course of an evening and having that awkwardness and resentment escalate and escalate and escalate until it exploded and got weirdly violent, right? Like, that would have been really cool. And I would have watched the one that's just like avenging Celtic angels wreaking shop on some dipshits who didn't respect the land, you know, like Feast that we watched recently. Like, that was neat, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I would have reluctantly watched another home invasion movie because I really don't like the genre, it turns out. Just home invasion is not my thing. But having all of those things kind of set up and then none of it really knocked down got frustrating. And I didn't care about the home invaders, and I really wanted to see the movie develop organically instead of turn right for act three and just kind of go nutty, but then come to what I felt was like a really pat conclusion. So I don't know, like a little bit of it towards the beginning. I liked the tenor of it and the cleverness. I loved that they did the grand unveiling of her art piece that she had made exclusively for this place. And it is just a one-for-one copy of the Celtic thing. Like we're expecting some work of sculpture and she unveils it and everyone says it's brilliant and are completely blown away by it. And that is like, that bit is really sharp. And I felt like to me, the rest of it just wasn't, it didn't do much for me after that.
Yeah. Credit where it's due. Our home invaders look great. Like, well, yeah, I think the look of that is fucking cool. And then honestly, I was impressed with their, like, as much as I don't like, you know, like the, all the problems I have with like how that was supposed to work out, but like they come in, they look fucking cool and they never say a word. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going, wow, this is a movie where everyone's really going like overtime, making sure that they cannot be identified afterwards. Like, interesting. Like, I wonder like if we're going to get that moment where they have to like talk to authorities or something. And they're like, well, you have to know something, you know? And they're like, well, mm-hmm. they never said a word. Oh, really? Then how'd they tell each, like, and like that, you know, makes their, them not be believed maybe. And then the authorities leave and then like, oh no, we're stuck on our own again or some shit. Like, I was like, that's, they're putting a, pouring a lot of effort into that. And then it just kind of didn't matter. It's like, oh, okay. And like the least surprising reveal ever. You're like, okay, all right, fine. So like there's like well, moments like that.
The same reveal as the Swedish-ish one that we watched recently where they were going to have the IKEA.
Yeah. Built yeah. In the- well, and it's just like, well, it, and you look at that and you go, well, duh, who the fuck else would it be? Like, you know, like it's the like, aha, like,
actually.
Yeah. Like that's the thing is like, if you rip off the mask and it's like, I don't know, the we'll designated hitter. Yeah. It's like the designated hitter from the Pittsburgh Pirates in 87. You go, what? Like, you're right. I did not suspect that.
His button chops given away. Oh, yeah,
like truly. I am surprised. Like, you know what, but why? Like you need motive. And like, unless you're going to do the thing of like, you were home, which you can do once. Like, so it was just like, yeah, like, of course, like who, if you're sitting there going, who would be, why are you doing this to us? Like, well, fucking you get three guesses and the first two don't count.
Like, yeah, probably the dudes who tackled you at the festival when you, when yeah. you were trying to do your social media video,
the guy that like thinks you're such a shit stain that they ruin your live feed. Like, yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Like it's, there's a couple parts like that. Like, yeah, I like the thing with the sculpture being kind of a womp womp. And then I like the early part of like the invasion thing. I was like, ah, this is kind of cool, but I didn't, you know, I'm already predisposed to hate like awkwardness as a thing used in either like building tension or comedy. Like I can't watch Meet the Parents, you know, like I did that stuff just drives me insane. And so like, the entirety of this thing of watching people just kind of be shitty to each other without really saying it and hating each other and fucking with each other and no one wanting to be there. And like, I just go, I don't, this is uncomfortable. I don't like this. I'm not thinking like, oh wow, what an interesting tableau. Cause I'm just not wired to be able to think of anything except for, I want to turn this off. It's making me feel blech. So, and not in like the good way where a movie's like freaking you out, but just like, it's gross. So, but that's my own personal hang up. So like I couldn't even enjoy that part, I guess. So yeah.
So the
rough watch for me.
So so one thing that you guys mentioned that I was going to go back to was, you know, the other guy's not talking or whatever else, but one of the things I love about that, what I really thought worked well was that initially there's a lot of that kind of like moving. It's kind of slow and kind of turning and pointing and like very ominous. And the masks look fucking crazy. And you know, these guys are already on edge anyway because of all the things going on. And then this whole thing kind of occurs. And it's sort of like, oh, geez, this is a lot. But at a certain point, these guys, because there wasn't a big grand criminal plan and there wasn't a we're going to torture them and murder them all plan, at a certain point, they're like, we only wrote the first act of this play. And this is going on longer than so. At a certain point, like one gestures to the other one, and then he's just, the other one's like, "What?" And he's like that over that way. And he's just like, "What?" And it's like, and I love that. It's a stupid little thing, but I just thought it was great because I was just sort of like, it's like, yeah, they're like, you know, like
very human.
Yeah, it's like it's just taking the John, you know, as much as I love the Die Hard movies, it's like taking the John McClane-ness out of things. I really dig, because it just creates, you know, never done more brilliantly than Blue Ruin. Like, that's one of the most perfect examples of that. But just in general, when you take the John McClane-ness out of a thing, like, I really kind of appreciate what that does to the dynamics of stuff. But then the one part I would be remiss to not bring up was, I think I mentioned to you guys when this came out a couple years ago, when we saw this, was like, this has a wonderful 17 seconds of just nonstop violence that I just loved, because they go upstairs and, like, she clocks him with the thing, and the other guy, then the other lady gets shot, and then this thing happens, and that guy gets stabbed in the neck, throat, shoulder area, and then in comes the guy, and then boom, out the window, crash on the ground. Like, all occurs within like a very short amount of time.
Surprisingly, like, whoa, shit.
Like, god damn it. And what I love about that is sort of like all this controlledness, right? The guy's coming into the home, we're gonna scare him with this thing, and crumbled his real estate wellness bullshit, whatever else. And then put upon guy is like, I'm gonna drop a bunch of bombshells and I'll finally have some degree of respect. It's like, well, that's not gonna happen. And then dipshit friend is like, even though we have this agreement, we've known each other entire lives, we're all in charge of our lives, just because of money, we're gonna fuck somebody over 10 minutes to Tuesday, and that should be fine, right? Because, I mean, whatever. And it's sort of like, and all these kind of things, but then, like, also snap, really violent, crazy bullshit can happen when your life is being threatened, or just a random sequence of events you can't control. It's like, boom. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I really love that. I really love that it just kind of goes, it's not like one of them walks out into the little courtyard area and then a la Bloom County gets crushed by a piece of space trash. It wasn't like that random, but it was more just sort of like nobody could plan this to occur in a way that anybody's going to keep control of it. I really, really like that. I really enjoy that. I think it's super fun. And it's sort of, it does sort of become a little bit, you know, banal in its way, and the way that it kind of wraps its, you know, kind of like a, well,
that it puts on it, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of like, and it puts a little bow on it, which feels very, it does feel very British in a way, where it's sort of like, the one that a lot of people liked, I didn't like as much, the end of the world one with the one set at Christmas time, where it's sort of like all this awful, awful things are happening. And it's like, but we have to arrange the matches. And it's sort of like,
for the children.
Yeah. And it's like, well, we have to kind of do the thing. And this has that kind of feel to it too, where it's sort of like, there's no way you'll ever, in all practicality, walk away emotionally or logistically from this mess, but we just have to still kind of put on the airs and the things and all the rest of it. And it's sort of like, it's like, oh, that was a kind of a weird sequence of events. And it's sort of like, and I really appreciate that. So I don't know, like I said, I just had a very different experience watching this than you guys did, but that's okay.
I mean, ultimately, I think I was reacting a little bit to the guy just being so absolutely retro and his idea of, like, to me, like, it's so tiresome now to see a dude character who's intimidated because his wife makes more money than he does. It's like, why don't we just have him talk about babysitting his kids and not know how to change a diaper, and that shit will be hilarious. Like, I know there are dudes like that in the world, but Mr. Mom came out like 35 years ago, you know?
It reminds me of the thing that I saw a few months ago. I think I saved it on my phone. There's this picture of Travis Scott with, is it Travis Scott with, or Aesop, whoever Rihanna's married to, and it's like, and he's like carrying a baby bag, it has a baby thing on his front, and a few of these milquetoast dipshits, the Tucker Carlsons and a couple of these kind of guys are like, oh, it's just complete emasculation of his masculinity or whatever else. And then some comedian like commented, like reposted and commented on it. It's like, fellas, is it gay to impregnate Rihanna twice? it's perfect.
That is perfect.
It's absolutely perfect.
Perfect answer.
It's absolutely perfect. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that, you know, it's as much as we'd like to think that, you know, and maybe from a plot standpoint, yeah, do different things, but I do definitely think that there is that kind of thing where you're going to some of your decision making and your actions and the way that you view the world as owing you some degree of respect can be fueled by some misplaced, you know, lack of self-worth. And like, that's kind of how he plays it out.
I know I can't reference Andrew Tate and then say, I can't believe a protagonist in this day and age who's that hopped up on.
Yeah, but when you talk about like real people, it's pretty rare.
I mean, it was surprising for him because he seems to be set up in the movie as just like your average guy.
Yeah.
And then just the depth of his insecurity just surfaces slowly over the course of the movie. And I guess I wasn't prepared for it.
It's a bummer to me.
Like in the beginning of it, he's out for a run and he sees a fox that's got its leg stuck in a wire and he's too afraid to approach the fox. And then the fox somehow makes its way to his house. And then a strapping young Irish lad has to kill it, like mercy kill it for him. And in the end of the movie, he gets to mercy kill strapping Irish lad. And I was very mad about that.
That's the most,
that was the point.
Peckinpah thing in the world.
Yeah. He had to, and maybe like we're subverting that and I'm just too dumb for that. But yeah, I don't know. So this one, like there's nothing really wrong with the way that it's put together. Like, I feel like it has at least one movie, two minis worth of stuff in it. And it didn't, it just offended my sensibilities, I guess, to the point where I had a hard time enjoying it. I do like two or three scenes in it. I did like Feast better as an example of this thing, you know, the evil land developer and the thing in the hey. And the weird rich people, and I don't know. This is like a 4.5 out of 10 for me. I didn't hate it, but by the time it was done, I was pretty frustrated with it.
I gave it a 4. Pretty much right there with you for kind of the same reason. It's they're doing everything very well. I can't get invested in the story. I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit too familiar in some ways. And just like I'd said, just for like things that are my own personal quirks of things I find off putting is like too much of that as well. And it just didn't come together where, I don't know, I guess I felt like I wasn't like sitting through the parts that I didn't like or was kind of bored by to get to the end. I was like, I don't think there was a payoff here that was good enough for me to think that like this is something I would like be excited about or recommend to people. I just kind of was done with it and sort of walked away feeling like, you know, having seen Skeletons in the Closet first, I certainly didn't feel like I had wasted my time.
Yeah, I care about it. It was definitely cleansed there.
But yeah, it's like, you know how when you're hungry and you can't find anything that actually sounds good around the house, you just eat something and you're like, well, I'm not going to die. But like, I'm certainly not like, that wasn't enjoyable. Yeah, like, I guess I'll have a peanut butter sandwich if you're whatever. Like, by the way, listeners, if any of you out there want to make more money than me and pay for things, we could talk about a relationship. that has been the norm for me since, 2000-ish. So I'm perfectly comfortable with being the one that does not make as much money. So, yeah, putting that out there. Y'all know who you are.
A sugar mommy or a non-binary?
I'm not picky. Sugar. I'm sugar being the important part. I'm either into or willing to learn with just about anything. So
I'm not gay, but $20 is $20. Yes,
gay enough. Like, yeah. So yeah.
I mean, like I said, my experience was quite a bit different. There's a lot that I really liked about this, and I really enjoyed the kind of like the senselessness of how each one of these guys is kind of ill-fated and ill-placed plans just kind of fall in on themselves, because ultimately revenge plans don't work. Ultimately fucking over people plans don't work. And you know, ultimately like kind of like all the interpersonal and romantic-y kind of things, like none of that shit works either. And so it's sort of like all these kind of like misbegotten kind of and poorly planned kind of things have their inevitable sort of conclusion in this cacophonous mess. And I like that. And I thought it was funny. So it's like, it, like I said, I really enjoyed it. I said, like, I'm going to be way higher than you guys. So I'm going to say 8. I really, like I said, nice. I really dug the shit out of this. I thought it was awesome. Out of 10. Although, to Josh's point about the fox bit or whatever, the thing where it's in the house, that did kind of bug me because it was a sort of like, it was like, obviously Thin Head brought it there. Like, right. Very obviously, like that thing did not crawl its fox ass into their kitchen.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like, obviously.
I thought it was a hallucination when it popped
out. I did too. Yeah. I thought that was him being like, I can't get over the fact that I did nothing.
What I think it was. Direction again.
Well, like, and then, but like, obviously, Thin Head brought it there, and like, they don't really address that necessarily. And I would have actually liked a little bit more of, like, a little bit more animosity with like him and like the locals to like play up his level of entitlement, or to the idea that like maybe he legitimately has put some serious work into a lot of stuff in his life, but because he's of means and probably a better education, he's then a pariah character, kind of person in these people's eyes, even though he was the one involved in the land deal. Like, I would have liked that dynamic too. And so there's a little bit of it, but not enough to kind of fuel that more, which I think would have been kind of cool to make him more interesting character. But that being said, like I said, I really enjoyed it. And I just, hats off to anybody who can just have a good solid 17 seconds of just nonstop like violence in that way. That's just like, what the fuck? And like, God bless them. So yeah, 8 out of 10, obelisks of underwhelming design.
The old OUDs. Do you know how to use OUDs?
Yeah, wait, you know me.
OUDs nuts.
Excellent.
So one night we were watching Dune as we were falling asleep, and as we frequently do, and they started going, Atreides, Atreides, Atreides. And I was like, yeah, enjoy Atreides nuts. And I laughed so hard that I almost passed out, and my wife was not as amused.
Sometimes shit just catches you. If it just catches just the right way. It's just like, yep.
It's one of those things where like a D's nuts joke is like, both inherently not funny and inherently funny. And it's just depends on the day and the mood and all that, you know, whatever your horoscope said. Cause sometimes, yeah, it is the funniest, best thing in the world. It's like, back in the days of like high school, I got really into your mom jokes before most of my friends did. And one of my buddies, Timmy, one time got really mad at me cause I had done a bunch of them in a row. He's like, Matt, fucking stop it with your mom jokes. They're fucking old and tired. And I go, like, your mom? And he looks at me with just daggers and then bursts out laughing. And he went from just actually mad to like mad. He was like, thought it was funny to funny. And I was like, whew. And it's like, sometimes that shit just works, you know?
God.
Hi, we're going to take a quick break and be back with things to watch next time.
Yes, sir.
So next week we are going to watch some pretty current things. We all just happened to watch Lisa Frankenstein in theaters. I'm very sad about how Lisa Frankenstein is doing at the box office, so I'm going to go see it again. And we're going to talk about that because it was a blast. Then we're going to watch Thanksgiving from Eli Roth. You'll find that on Netflix. And History of Evil is dropping on Shudder on this coming Friday.
23rd. So
I'm going to watch that one too. I'm going to watch that after having my wisdom teeth removed.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Oh, wow. You're just doing that now.
It'll be an experience. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Just finally, they were like, you know, your mouth would be a lot happier if it didn't have all this bullshit jammed in it. And like, well, you got a point. So off we go. So Lisa Frankenstein, Thanksgiving, History of Evil. And then I will observe I have been Josh this entire time, and I will say a bahai.
And we will have a short, which will be, I think the full title is Bleeding Bonds, A Tale of Two Sisters, which I think that's what the full title is. It seems maybe, I think that's right. I don't know. I found that off a thing, but it is a cool, weird
thing.
Yeah. very much in our wheelhouse as being a cool, weird stop motion thing. So I like to find stuff like that when I can, and I did, so we'll watch it. And maybe you will too, because it will be embedded in the show notes of this episode, which you can find on our website, horrorshowhotdog.com. And with that, I will say, as far as you all know, thank you. As far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Don Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Be good, or some medicum of good. And we'll talk towards you before we do it. And then that'll be good. But in the meantime, we'll see you later. And also, bye.
It was so goddamn funny when Wait, Don't Tell Me is sponsored by them for a while. And every commercial was ZipRecruiter, 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 ZipRecruiter. And there was one specific week where Peter Sagal goes, and this is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. I was like, oh, somebody told him.
Somebody told him, yeah.
Yeah. Like, sir, we are not selling vagina fasteners.
Yeah.
Vulva fasteners. We're not the ZipRecruiter. Your ZipRecruiter, what are you doing in your ZipRecruiter mall? Oh, they're coming to take me away.